This is the real life Mario.
Wow. Yeah, that definitely grabs your attention, doesn't it?
It really does. It takes something so familiar, so, well, almost innocent from pop culture, and twists it into something deeply unsettling. Today, we're not just doing a deep dive, we're really descending. We're going down into the chilling and ultimately very tragic story of Marco Bellini. Just picture this: Queens, New York, 1993. A young man whose reality somehow starts to merge, to bleed into this kind of digital quest. It pulls him down, literally, beneath the city streets into this unseen, forgotten labyrinth. And what he finds down there, and maybe more importantly, what was later found in him, well, it leads to a discovery that still feels really disquieting today, like a dark whisper from the urban underworld.
It's a story that really sticks with you. It makes you question things.
Exactly. So our mission on this deep dive is to unpack the key insights from this whole unsettling tale. One perspective, mine, will be like an investigator, meticulously tracing Marco's descent, trying to lay out the facts as they unfolded piece by piece.
And I'll be taking the other side, constantly sort of challenging that narrative, grappling with the really unsettling questions here. Questions about perception, about the massive influence of powerful substances. And, that incredibly fragile line, the terrifyingly thin barrier between a mind's vivid delusion and maybe a darker, more tangible truth lurking just beneath the surface.
We're here to try and give you a shortcut to understanding this truly bizarre incident, but be warned, we're not going to land on easy answers. There aren't any, really. Instead, we're going to navigate the unease, that lingering sense of wrongness, and let you draw your own conclusions about what Marco Bellini truly encountered down there.
What's so striking about Marco Bellini's story, I think, is how quickly the seemingly mundane, the ordinary, can just completely unravel. It spirals into something almost inexplicable. And it forces you to confront not just the personal tragedy, of one lost individual, but these broader questions about how easily our minds can build these elaborate, I mean, terrifyingly coherent fictions, especially when they're influenced by external factors and things we maybe don't fully get, like potent drugs or maybe something else. So we'll be asking, was this a classic case, just an extreme one, of drug-induced psychosis, a mind breaking under immense pressure? Or did Marco genuinely stumble onto something else, something hidden, maybe something biological, a horror lurking beneath the city? Did the game somehow become terrifyingly real?
Let's start at the beginning then. Let's set the scene. We need to go back to Queens, early 1990s. You've got the hum of the city always moving, technology starting to evolve in ways we couldn't fully grasp yet. And right in the middle of it, there's Marco Bellini, just a resident, right? Seemingly living a pretty ordinary life like so many others. But the records, they show this subtle, maybe early sign of deviation. He dropped out of trade school. Mm-hmm. Now, on the surface, okay, maybe not a huge deal. Lots of young people switch paths, try to find their way. But looking back, you wonder, could this disengagement mean more? Was he searching for something different? Maybe an early hint of a struggle, to connect with conventional life, or even just this restlessness bubbling up inside.
That's a really important point to flag early on. That detail about trade school, it's not just background noise, is it? It immediately prompts you to think about his pre-existing mental state, his disposition. Was this just, like you said, a young guy exploring options? Totally normal phase for some? Or could it actually hint at underlying vulnerabilities, maybe a predisposition that made him more susceptible, I guess, to the extreme experiences that came later? Perhaps leaving that structured environment wasn't just about career choice. Maybe it signaled a deeper difficulty fitting in, an early sign of a mind already looking for, well, a different way to understand the world. Even before the heavy stuff, the psychedelics, entered the picture.
Yeah, it kind of lays the groundwork.
It does. We need to consider his starting point, not just assume this all came out of absolutely nowhere. It really sets the stage for how he might interpret everything that follows.
And it seems like that search for a different framework, maybe that underlying difficulty, it found a catalyst, a really potent one. This is where things take a sharp turn. The moment Marco steps onto this new, incredibly perilous path, he started experimenting with psychedelics.
Right.
And his interpretation of these experiences, that's what becomes absolutely critical to understanding his descent. He didn't just say he was hallucinating or tripping. He called it, very specifically, leveling up.
Leveling up.
Yeah, that phrase, right. Plucked straight out of video game culture, which was really taking off then, it immediately gave him this framework, this narrative structure to filter and understand these profoundly altered perceptions. It wasn't just casual slang, a playful nod. It seems like it quickly became the core story he told himself about his new reality, blurring those lines between game and life almost instantly.
That specific terminology, leveling up, it's It's incredibly telling, isn't it?
Yeah.
When people take psychedelics, I mean, we know these substances dramatically mess with the brain's usual filters. Things get distorted intensely. You know, walls seeming to breathe, sounds becoming overwhelming, patterns emerging on surfaces. Now, for someone maybe already feeling disconnected, like Marco might have been, these intense shifts could easily feel like, okay, this is a new reality, not just a temporary drug effect.
Right, a promotion almost.
Exactly. So was leveling up initially just a conscious choice? A way to describe these weird, profound experiences using language he knew, language from games, something kind of playful, or did very quickly morph into something more, a genuine, deeply felt belief system for understanding his consciousness? Did it shift from just a metaphor to, like, a literal truth in his mind? How fast that shift happened, from playful to potentially pathological? That's a really crucial point. Are we looking at, you know, a classic case of drug-induced psychosis where maybe existing thoughts or narrators find this powerful outlet and just take over? Or is there something specific about choosing that analogy, leveling up, games that hints at something deeper, maybe a pre-existing obsession with escape or progression or finding some hidden layer to reality?
And as he went further down this path, deeper into the leveling up, the experiences he reported just became incredibly vivid, immersive, almost overwhelmingly sensory. He talked about feeling walls actually shifting around him, like the solid environment was becoming malleable, plastic. He'd hear things too, very distinct things, like the metallic clink of coins dropping nearby, seemingly out of nowhere, echoing in his perception.
Coins, like in the game.
Exactly. And even more disturbingly, he claimed he could see tunnels opening up right there in the floor in front of him, like portals beckoning him down into these unseen depths. These weren't just fleeting thoughts, you know, not mild distortions. They were intense, multi-sensory experiences completely reshaping his world. His environment was literally distorting, becoming this interactive, tangible game space in his mind.
Okay, this brings us right to a key question about the specificity of all this. You described the distortions, spatial changes, auditory hallucinations like the coins, visual ones like the tunnels. And yes, on one level, these are incredibly common descriptors for intense psychedelic experiences. Lots of substances can cause similar things, the breathing walls, the amplified sounds, scene patterns. That's well documented.
Sure.
But here's where it gets, well, weird. Is Marco just reporting these known effects? And his mind, already primed by the leveling up idea and maybe a fondness for Mario games, is simply filtering them through that specific lens,
yeah,
attaching the coin label to a random sound, the tunnel label to a visual pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Or is there something more significant in the particular nature of these hallucinations, the coins, the tunnels? These aren't just random, are they? They directly mirror the iconography of a very specific video game.
Yeah, it's undeniable.
So it forces you to wonder, did the drugs just amplify a script that was already there? Maybe buried deep in his psyche, one he was already kind of obsessed with? Or did the drug experience itself somehow provide the script? Did it directly shape his perceptions into this specific and ultimately terrifying game narrative?
It's a really crucial distinction, I think, for understanding just how deeply his reality got tangled up with this digital world.
And this internal leveling up, this game playing out in his head, it didn't stay internal for long. It manifested in this really profound, really harrowing lifestyle shift.
Yeah.
By winter rolls around, the city's getting colder, harsher. Marco had completely abandoned the surface world. He left behind the reality the rest of us live in. He transitioned from living, you know, anywhere resembling normal shelter to existing entirely beneath the city. He's started inhabiting New York sewer systems, the storm drains, these forgotten crawl spaces, this whole hidden network.
Just incredible to even imagine. It wasn't just moving house. It feels like a complete immersion, almost ritualistic, into his quest. A physical rejection of his old life in favor of this new, unseen, and unbelievably dangerous underground reality. He wasn't just thinking the game anymore. He was living it. In the most literal, desperate, and frankly terrifying way, he essentially vanished from the world above ground.
And that immediately makes you think about the sheer practical and psychological impact of choosing or being compelled to live like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just try to picture it. Total darkness or near darkness. Constant damp, the cold seeping into your bones, the overwhelming stench of waste, the echoes, weird sounds, water dripping, maybe rats scurrying.
Yeah, a nightmare.
It means severe deprivation, right? Lack of food, light, any normal human contact, basic hygiene.
Mm.
Just gone. Plus intense isolation. And he's constantly exposed to who knows what. Unknown biological agents, environmental hazards like unstable structures, sudden water flows. Not to mention the sheer physical misery and risk of injury in such a hostile industrial space. So could the immense physical and psychological stress of that environment itself have massively worsened any delusions he already had, making him even more vulnerable, less tethered to any kind of shared reality, regardless of the drugs. I mean, the brain under that kind of extreme duress, deprived of normal input, it can start creating its own reality, often a frightening one.
That makes sense.
Or was it the other way around? Was the drastic, seemingly irreversible act of moving into the sewers a direct result of the delusions becoming just too strong, too compelling, overwhelming his ability to resist, demanding this complete physical commitment to his internal world? It feels like this intense feedback loop, doesn't it? The harsh reality of the sewers fuels the delusions, and the delusions keep him trapped down there, driving him deeper and deeper into danger.
And while he was down there, living in that nightmare, Marco apparently voiced this singular, unwavering obsession, the driving force that kept him going through the darkness. He often talked about searching for her.
Her?
Yeah. He'd whisper, apparently, "The princess. She's in another castle."
Wow. Straight from the game.
Exactly. It couldn't be clearer. That was the stated goal of his underground journey, cementing its roots firmly in that game world he perceived. The princess was the objective, the ultimate reward, the reason for all the leveling up. Those endless twisting tunnels and pipes. They were just the levels he had to beat, the stages to clear to finally reach her. So it wasn't just aimless wandering fueled by drugs. It seems like it was this focused, horribly purposeful quest driven by his completely warped reality.
The specificity of that princess motif, It's really unsettling. You wonder, is that a common archetype in severe delusions? This projection of an ideal, maybe a lost love or a deep-seated need for rescue, for validation, That somehow got tangled up with the drugs in the game story.
Could be.
I mean, the idea of a damsel in distress needing a hero, It's a powerful narrative, almost universal.
Sure.
But that specific phrase, "she's in another castle," that particularly highlights the escalating, never-ending nature of his quest, doesn't it? It's like this built-in mechanism for frustration. It constantly pushes him deeper, deeper physically into the sewer labyrinth, and deeper psychologically into the delusion. Anytime he might feel like he's made progress, reached a goal, nope, another castle. It forces him further down the rabbit hole, making sure the struggle is endless.
Yeah, ensuring he never wins.
Exactly. So what was he really looking for through this image of a princess always just out of reach? Was it salvation? Maybe for himself? Or for this imagined woman? Or maybe for some lost, idealized part of himself he felt he had to reclaim from the depths? It's tragic, but that quest, however deluded, it gave his suffering a purpose, didn't it?
Until the end, the grim reality of Marco's journey, his secret life in the urban underworld, it finally crashed back into the surface world. Months later, they found him deep below Canal Street. Just think about that contrast, the bustling, vibrant city just feet above, totally oblivious to this hidden drama playing out right beneath their feet.
Unbelievable.
He was barefoot. It's such a small detail, but it speaks volumes, doesn't it? About how detached he was from practical concerns, from self-preservation. And he was burned.
Burned.
Yeah, found in a boiler room, a place of intense heat, industrial danger, forgotten machinery roaring away. This discovery, so deep underground, it's this stark, terrifying counterpoint to the fantasy quest he thought he was on. It was this hidden, almost unreachable world, a forgotten stage where his game finally reached its brutal end scene.
Okay, let's pause on that burn detail for a second, because it's not just an injury, is it? It feels like a critical piece of this puzzle. Could it have been just an accident? I mean, navigating those dangerous industrial spaces, Boiler rooms with hot pipes, steams. Especially if you're impaired, disoriented by drugs, by the environment, by sheer exhaustion and terror, it's certainly plausible.
Sure, it could be.
Or does the nature of the burns, maybe the severity, suggest something more, something active? Maybe a perceived confrontation that happened inside his delusion.
Yeah.
Was this boiler room, this fiery, hellish place, was this the another castle he'd finally reached? The final level? And did those burns play a part in his perception of reaching some final, intense, maybe even fiery showdown?
A battle scar, almost.
Possibly. The physical evidence here is so potent, it forces you to consider if his internal game started having very real external consequences, making the line between his mind and the harsh physical reality terrifyingly thin. Those burns aren't just an injury. They might be a visceral clue, a physical wound from a metaphorical fight.
And maybe the most crucial piece of evidence Marco left behind. Maybe the most haunting. It wasn't his body. It was a message. He'd carved it into the brickwork of that boiler room.
He carved something.
Yeah. A deliberate act. A lasting communication from the absolute depths of his perceived reality. His last known action. The message read, starkly, unmistakably. I found the boss fight.
Oh, wow. Chilling.
Isn't it? It's not just random graffiti from a disturbed mind. It's a statement. One that directly, horribly validates his whole leveling up narrative, his game reality. It suggests he believed he'd reached the end. The culmination of his terrifying journey, a moment of ultimate confrontation, he found it. The final challenge.
I found the boss fight. That phrase was profoundly unsettling. I mean, in his state, that profoundly altered reality. What could that boss fight possibly represent? Was it a perceived entity? Some monster he imagined down there in the heat and shadows of the boiler room with the machinery roaring like some beast?
Could be.
Or was it maybe internal? A struggle against his own mind finally breaking down, a desperate internal battle against the chaos, the ultimate enemy being himself, his sanity slipping away.
A fight he lost.
Or maybe. Could it even have been a confrontation with something he actually encountered down there? Something real, in the absolute forgotten depths of the city, something that defied easy explanation, something, well, alien. Terrifying.
That's the unnerving possibility, isn't it?
And the act of carving it, that takes time. Effort. It suggests a moment of clarity, maybe, or at least this incredibly powerful primal urge to communicate, to leave a record, even in the middle of whatever horror he was experiencing. But what kind of clarity? Did he think he won this fight, or was it a desperate last message? The brutal climax of a game that had become far too real, with consequences that were tragically final. That message is like this tiny, horrifying window into his last moments, still shrouded in mystery.
After they found him, after pulling him out of that subterranean hell, Marco's story takes another turn, a stark, institutional one. From that terrifying, hidden world he'd inhabited, he was brought back to the surface world. But he died shortly after, in a psychiatric ward.
So he didn't die in the boiler room itself?
No. He died in the ward, which provides this sort of clinical, almost sterile end to such an unconventional and deeply disturbing story. It highlights the medical system trying to step in, trying to manage, to contain a condition that really defied easy labels. A mind that had gone way beyond conventional understanding into realms that were psychological, yes, but also, as we're about to find out, maybe biological, too. It felt like the system's last resort for someone who'd gone too deep. A final attempt to bring him back, but ultimately it wasn't enough.
The fact he died in the ward, not down there, It speaks volumes, doesn't it? About all the different factors probably involved in his death. Was it the physical trauma, the burns, the sheer awfulness of living in the sewers for months, the cold, the damp malnutrition, constant exposure to God knows what pathogens? Did his body just give out?
Very possible.
Or was it maybe an overdose, substances still in his system? Or maybe a final complication of his underlying mental state just reaching a fatal point? His system just overwhelmed.
Hard to know for sure.
And what does that final setting, the psych ward, tell us about the medical community's ability, back then especially, to really grasp or treat the sheer totality of what he'd been through? Was his death the end of his life? Or in his mind, was it just another stage of the game, maybe the game over screen he never consciously saw?
Mm-hmm.
That ward represents this return to a stark reality, maybe a terrifying one for him, that he tried so desperately to escape. A final brutal collision of his two worlds.
And this is perhaps where Marco Bellini's story really tips over, where it transcends the purely psychological, you know, the drug psychosis, the mental illness framework, and enters this realm of genuine, tangible mystery, where it really leans into urban legend horror territory. The autopsy. After he died, it reveals something startling, something profoundly unsettling, a factual detail that still gives you chills when you hear it. They found spores in his lungs.
Spores. Like fungus.
Exactly. But not just any spores. They found mushrooms, fungi that no one could identify.
Unidentified. Seriously.
Unidentified. This isn't subjective experience, right? This isn't delusion. This is objective biological evidence. It introduces this element of the genuinely unexplained into an already incredibly bizarre story. The fact that they remained unidentified, that's the absolute key to the mystery. It's this biological wild card suggesting something far beyond our typical understanding, something found inside him. From down there.
Okay, wait. The inability to identify these fungi, that's not just a minor footnote. That's a profound, chilling gap in the whole scientific narrative here. Think about it. 1993. Okay, medical forensics wasn't what it is today, but they could usually identify common pathogens, known fungi, bacteria. That was standard procedure. So the fact these remained a mystery, it suggests either they were incredibly rare, maybe even a completely novel species.
Right.
Could they be unique to that specific, weird microecosystem? Deep beneath the city, thriving in the dark, the damp, the unique chemical soup of the sewers. That's possible. Or were they maybe common environmental spores that for some reason inside his body became unusually pathogenic? Or even started producing psychoactive compounds within him, which could explain both his physical deterioration and his ongoing hallucinations, like a biological feedback loop from hell.
Wow, that's a disturbing thought.
And, you know, identifying fungi, especially obscure ones, it's way harder than identifying bacteria. Many need very specific conditions to grow in a lab. And back in 93, DNA sequencing wasn't routine like it is now. So unidentified isn't just a shrug. It probably means they couldn't culture it or didn't match anything in their databases. It's this genuinely unsettling blank spot in the record.
So not just delusion.
Exactly. This isn't just internal. It's tangible, biological evidence pointing towards some unknown external force that literally infiltrated his body. It forces you to ask, what else was lurking down there? What was influencing Marco's reality beyond the drugs he chose to take? What if? What if that boss fight he carved? What if it wasn't just in his head against some imagined monster? What if it was a desperate physical struggle against an internal invasion, a biological entity consuming him from the inside out?
The mushrooms themselves, the boss fight.
Could this unidentified fungus have been a direct agent in shaping his delusions, turning his perception into that horrifying game, or maybe even initiating the leveling up in some biological way he couldn't possibly understand, transforming his body and mind irreversibly? The biological reality here is just as haunting as the psychological one, maybe more so.
And the final word, the raw coda to Marco's entire story. It's this stark punctuation mark on his tragic journey, a haunting echo, almost like a whisper from the depths of his suffering. The concluding words tied to his journey are simply pain, pain.
Just.
Pain.
Pain.
Yeah. That stark, repetitive phrase, it's like this raw, visceral postscript. It echoes a suffering so deep it almost seems to go beyond just physical sensation. It hints at mental anguish on an unimaginable scale. It just strips away all the game narrative, all the complexity, and leaves you with the brutal, undeniable reality of suffering.
What does that repetition, pain, pain, what does it truly signify? In the context of everything he went through, in those final moments, likely in the ward, is it just a literal reflection of his immense physical suffering? The agony from the burns, the damage from living in the sewers, whatever those unidentified mushrooms were doing to his system as he lay dying? That's certainly plausible.
Yeah, the physical toll must have been immense.
Or is it deeper? An expression of profound mental anguish? The sheer terror of his perceived reality finally collapsing around him? A mind battling its own disintegration, struggling to tell what was real, what was illness, what was the fungus? Could it even be read as a final desperate warning to anyone who might follow, a concise summary of his ultimate defeat, defeat by the boss fight or by those insidious mushrooms that invaded him?
It's so stark.
The power is in its simplicity, isn't it? It's just this raw, primal scream. It strips away everything else except that fundamental sensation of suffering, a final desperate cry from a game that had absolutely no mercy.
So we're left here, aren't we, with this deeply unsettling, profound ambiguity surrounding Marco Bellini's entire story. Was he, in the end, just a tragic victim? A victim of severe drug abuse, maybe untreated mental illness, his mind constructing this elaborate game narrative as what? A coping mechanism? A desperate search for meaning? Or just a full plunge into psychosis?
That's one possibility, the rational explanation, perhaps.
Or does that chilling discovery, those unidentified spores found in his lungs, does that truly suggest he stumbled into something else? A genuinely unknown, maybe biological horror, lurking in the forgotten depths right beneath a major city. A living urban legend made flesh or fungus.
The evidence, the sources we've looked at, they just refuse to give us that simple, neat answer, don't they?
No easy answers here. We're left navigating this really unsettling space between those two terrifying possibilities, psychological breakdown or biological horror. And Marco Bellini's journey, it really forces you, the listener, to question the stability of your own perceptions, to think about the hidden worlds that might exist, not in some fantasy novel, but literally right beneath our feet, forgotten, unseen, and maybe profoundly dangerous. It makes you confront that fragile line between what we consume, whether it's drugs or media or even the air we breathe, what we believe, and what truly exists out there, or maybe even inside us.
Yeah, how easily can our minds build these elaborate fictions that feel completely, undeniably real, especially when influenced by external factors we don't fully grasp, factors that might even be biological, growing inside us, changing us.
His story is like this dark invitation to look closer at the world around us and maybe the hidden realities just beneath the surface.
Which brings up an even more provocative thought for you to chew on long after we finish here. What if? What if Marco's leveling up wasn't just a metaphor he latched onto, not just a psychological construct fueled by drugs? What if it was somehow literal? A biological transformation? Or some kind of interaction initiated by those unidentified spores he inhaled down there?
A transformation, wow.
And what if the boss fight wasn't just a delusion, not just his mind breaking? What if it was a desperate final struggle against some ambient corrupting entity? Something biological, something alien, something truly monstrous down there that manifested itself as his ultimate enemy in that boiler room, consuming him piece by biological piece. It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? What else might be living down there, evolving in the dark, completely beyond our current understanding?
He thought it was a game, but it never had an end screen.